Organize Me Radio, episode 56, Women and Emotional Labor. I'm Naima Ford Goldson. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Organize Me Radio. I'm Naima Ford Goldson, and today's guest is the owner and CEO of A Clear Path, which she created in 2008, and she specializes in chronically disorganized clients. She is also the author of Emotional Labor, Why a Woman's Work is Never Done, and What to Do About It. Please welcome Dr. Regina F. Lark. Hi, Regina. I am so excited to have this chat with you today. We're going to talk about women and emotional labor, but I would love to learn how you got your start in the organizing industry.
Naima, what a treat this is for me. I from the day I met you, which has been about 2 years, I felt like I met a kindred spirit because you're the only other organizer I ever met that calls herself a feminist.
Yes.
I always encourage people, if you're not calling yourself a feminist, just look up the definition and you will. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how did I get started? Well, I started because I had to eat. I had spent my career in higher education. I too am a feminist, and I finished 4 degrees in history, and every degree in history was about women's history. And so I really had such a strong foothold in higher ed when it came to women's studies, gender studies, and then 19th, 20th century history. And in June of 2008, I went to Jerusalem to visit a very good friend of mine. And while I was there, I said, Nadhra, I don't want to be a tourist today. How about if I do your kitchen? And she goes, Habibti, what does that mean? And I said, Nadhra, your girls are in their 30s. You got sippy cups in the cupboard. Just let me do what I do. Wow. And she did let me do what I do. It was a good result. I get back to my desk at UCLA, and I learned 1 week later that my unit was being dismantled, my position eliminated. Wow. I told my roommate, 2 months into my layoff, I told my roommate, I said, I'm going to organize until something better comes along, and nothing has. And so one thing led to another. We looked up organizers in the zip code. The first person to come up is Catherine Macy. Catherine's got a PhD in mechanical engineering. And I thought, oh, organizers are smart people. And she invited us over for dinner. I came up with the name of the company on my walk over to dinner. And the rest, as they say, is herstory. I love working with chronically disorganized folks who we get their space to safe and habitable.
Yeah.
And not, you know, not showroom ready.
Yeah.
You know, and all of this, both the way you approach and the way I approach, are both so incredibly and inherently valuable to the people that we get to work with.
Right. And necessary. And yeah. I feel like when it comes to chronic disorganization, it's interesting because you don't realize there are so many different aspects of it. You know, when people think of it, they probably think hoarding, right? Mm-hmm. But there's ADHD, you know, traumatic brain injury, aging, right. Like all right. These things have an effect on how you're able to maintain the organization of your home. And so I think that, you know, being a person that specializes in that is just, I'm in awe of that, because, you know, to do that kind of work with chronically disorganized clients every day, you know, it just must take a lot. And, you know, having to work through that with your client to help them understand how to get to a space that's, like you said, livable, right?
Right. But it also, because of my work in chronic disorganization, you know, not all people who are chronically disorganized have a hoarding disorder, but all right. People with a hoarding disorder are chronically disorganized. But one of my big takeaways from working with chronically disorganized folks is the impact of a dysfunctional executive function and what that has on their abilities to plan and prioritize and do things in a linear way, to do things, you know, checking off to do becomes to done. And my knowledge of that, coupled with my work as a historian of women's history, coupled with my work as an organizer, all came together when I looked at how women are functioning at home.
It's like, I feel like it's like the perfect marriage and a great segue into your book, Emotional Labor, Why a Woman's Work is Never Done and What to Do About It. So tell us about your book. How did you come up with the concept of it?
Honestly, it wasn't hard because I walk into a client's home with a head full of information about executive functions in women's history. And I'm hearing my female clients back up. Most of the folks who call us for work are often professional women between the ages of 40 and 70. Smart women, high earning women, visionary, progressive, lovely women. And they're so good at what they do professionally, but when they get home, they not only can't hang up their own clothes, but that fact of their life puts them into spirals of shame, depression, anxiety, and despair. What's wrong with me? This is so easy. What's so hard about hanging up my clothes, putting dishes into a dishwasher, staying on top of the chore list? And I would sit there and listen to them, hear them tear themselves apart. And it was killing me. And so one day I'm listening and I'm sitting with Sylvia and we've just got stuff everywhere. And so she's telling me how anxious and frustrated, what's wrong with me. And I don't know how it popped out of my mouth, but it did. I said, Sylvia, honey, listen, just because you have a vagina doesn't mean this is all your job. And I don't often talk with my clients in that manner, but it was to me that most obvious moment because yeah. She kept saying this is her job responsibility. And so we sat and we talked about what I call the longest job description in herstory. Mm. It's never ending. It's 24/7. There's no stop and start. When we think about men's work, rarely, if ever, will we think vacuuming. When we say men's work, it's kind of across the board over what that could possibly mean. Say women's work, global understanding.
Yeah.
Instant global understanding of one type of job, and that's homemaking.
Yeah.
Which is nuts, you know? And then when we're sitting there and talking about this, coupled with conversation about how her brain is wired from birth, she happened to have ADHD that wasn't being well managed. And what is ADHD? It's executive function dysfunction. So what do we know about the executive function? What do we know about the nature of the work at home? Tedious, mind-numbing, boring, repetitive. So it all started coming together in my head. And so I sat down and we talked about Women's History 101. I went from Republican motherhood, that the weight of the Republic, you know, how do we form the best citizens of the state, you know, the best citizens of the state, you know, the future leaders of America are going to come from a well-ordered home. Mm. Well, what is a well-ordered home and who makes a well-ordered home?
Yeah.
The women. And so I think of that the weight of the Republic is now on her shoulders to produce good citizens. Wow, that's a lot of pressure. And it just hasn't left women's shoulders.
I remember when you spoke at a NABPO meeting. I don't remember if it was an Allies meeting or a regular meeting, but you spoke about women and emotional labor. And it really resonated with me, you know? after I heard you, I was like, I'm getting her book. I got your book the very next day. Like, I got it the next day. I was like, okay, no, I'm getting this book. Because I live in a place where I don't have a huge support system. I have a better support system now, but when I first moved here, I moved here straight out of college from Nebraska. So I didn't have, I had some, my grandfather lived in Savannah at the time. He now lives in Washington, D.C. And my brother lived in Columbus, but he was in the military. So he only lived out here for like maybe a couple of years while I was here. So when I got married and became a mother, I had no support system. And I felt like everything, you know, was on me. On top of that, I couldn't get back into the workforce. Like, I had the worst time trying to get back into the workforce. So I feel like your book just really spoke to me. Like, it just really was like, oh, this is what this is.
What I hear a lot is a husband will say, just make the appointment. And the work of the household, there's the obvious physical task, pick up the phone and make the appointment. But there are, you know, 20 layers of invisible work before you get to that phone call. So you don't just pick up the phone and make an appointment. You pull the other moms and parents to find out, well, what dentist do you use and what are their hours? And when can I extricate myself from my paid day to go, I mean, and is the school having any kind of schedule change over the, I mean, it's multiple layers of invisible to get to the one physical task.
So is that how you would define emotional labor? So all of the invisible things that we don't see to get to the physical task, like you just said.
Yeah, I would. I think I look at the household as having three components. One is the physical work, and one is the mental load of thinking about what's coming up, what needs to happen, what do we need to schedule, and how that becomes the emotional burden of it. So the physical work and then the mental load of the emotional labor. Because again, the mental load is I've got to pull parents, I've got to get the name of the dentist. And the emotional labor part is all of those steps of calling parents and finding the right dentist comes from the umbrella of love and caring and wanting to do right by our families, wanting to show them, not that we have to, but for them to recognize that there's love and that there's caring and that I'm doing these bodies of work so that you can have a good dental experience because I'm coming at this with a great deal of love. And I think that the emotional labor part is lovely and caring and love filled. But if you're the only one doing that in the home, it gets to be a huge, huge burden. And then leading to resentment and anxiety and frustration and despair.
How do we explain that to our partners? Like, how in the world do we tell our partners so that they understand, but, you know, will actually put things into action to change things up?
That's a great question, because I don't necessarily have an answer, but I jokingly will tell, somebody will say, oh my gosh, your book sounds great, I'm going to get it. And I said, okay. And then curl up with your spouse at night and each read a chapter together.
I love that.
Because that can come from a platform of love and wanting, you know, our family may be working great. How do we make it greater? And because the work of the household, because so much of it is invisible, and in order to create and establish a sense of gender equity at home, I think one of the first things we need to do is make the invisible visible. And because the work we do in the invisible part, the invisible work that we do is so pro forma, we don't even think about why we are polling the other parents to find a dentist. That just comes from years of experience.
Yeah.
It comes from how girls are raised into women to be always noticing what the hell's going on around them.
Yeah.
Noticing is a huge undervalued cognitive skill. It's huge.
And I feel like you don't even think about that, you know?
Exactly.
Like, it's like you just always know, right? You don't know how you know, but I mean, like, yes. You said, you're from a young girl, you're raised that way, right? But it's like just something that you always know, something that you always do, you know? And it's just, it's definitely tough being in a household where I have children and having to think about all those things. Like you said, the dentist, the doctor. For my son, I have a son who has autism. So all the therapy that he has to do, finding places, applying for services, you know, right, through school and things like that, signing the kids up for camp. So it's just a lot that goes into it, like, every day.
Well, but you said something that I think is really important, is we don't know how we know, but we know.
Yeah.
And where I see the overlay of this historical myth that women are just better at it, we may not be better at it if we don't have the executive function skills. I'll just say this. We're not better at it if we don't possess a functioning executive function. We're just not. There's always going to be piles of laundry. There's always going to be clothes thrown over chairs. There's always going to be stuff on the countertops. If our executive functions are not operating on a high level, then we're not going to be good at it. But we know what we know. We don't know how we know. So the knowing is one thing I think is so interesting, because women know. It's the execution of what we know that makes it such a challenge. And it speaks volumes to why we need to make our knowing known to the other adult in the household.
So I'm thinking back to when when my oldest son was a baby, and maybe around a toddler. And I would do kind of like mommy and me type classes with him. And my husband, you know, is pretty good at helping out. You know, I have to ask, of course, but, you know, he's pretty good at, you know, helping out with things. And a lot of the moms were, you know, when we'd have conversations, they'd be shocked, like, oh, your husband does this? Like, your husband gives your child a bath? Oh, your husband does that. My husband doesn't do any of that. And I'd be like, huh? Like, what do you mean? I mean, I ask him and he does it. I don't know if they were not asking, or if maybe they feel like, because we're women, maybe they feel like they should have carried the burden of it. I don't know. What do you think that is? Why do you think we do that?
I think it's based on the historical myth that women are just better at these things. And the emotional labor book has a part in it called the emotional labor life cycle. So I'm believing that there are several components to all of this, as many layers. There are many layers. And so making the invisible visible. When I think about wives asking their husbands for help, what they're essentially saying, this is all my job and I need a little help.
Yeah.
So there's one myth that we tend to hold on to, that this is all my job. And then the other myth is that we're really good at it. And then the other myth is that because it's all our job, we are going to need some help every now and again. where I'm coming to is how first making the invisible visible. And what that means is, have you read Fair Play yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Fair
no,
Play, 2019, Eve Rodsky.
Okay.
It's now a amazing documentary on Hulu.
Okay. Okay.
And then she came up with the Fair Play playing cards.
Oh, cool.
And it's everything. Self-care. And what does that look like? Spirituality. How are we going to bring this into our family? And it's all of the invisible and visible tasks associated with the household. And her premise is, let's just lay our cards on the table.
Yeah. Okay. I like it.
Lay the cards on the table and divide and conquer. So part of laying the cards on the table is not only making, it's showing very visibly, self-care is a thing.
Yeah.
We use those words, but what does that mean exactly in our household? And then when it comes to the tasks of the household, both visible and invisible, both cognitive and physical, we instead of asking for help, we radically delegate what needs to happen. Mm. We tend to delegate toward that, to the person who's best suited at it. So we've just established, we don't know how we know, but we know because we're raised to know.
Right.
So if we're raised to know, then on some level, of course, we're going to be quote unquote better at it, whether we have the cognitive skills or not. Radical delegate. So we get delegated the bulk of the work, mm-hmm. right? So when we're asking for help, we're saying the household is my responsibility. Radical delegation is delegating the work to be done because it has to be done. It's not based on who's better at it. Who cares who's better at it?
Yeah.
Because we're not looking for perfection. We're looking for progress and good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So who cares if you're better at it, really?
Yeah.
I hear a lot that there's only one way to load a dishwasher. I don't believe that. I don't believe you would either.
I don't, no.
But when I think about, I was telling this to somebody the other day, she said, yes, I agree that there are many ways to load a dishwasher, but if my 10-year-old or my spouse loads the dishwasher in an incorrect way and there's dried food left on the plate and the plate gets put away and my mother-in-law takes the plate out, I will be the one that she'll look at like bad housekeeper.
Ah.
So again, we have so many layers of who's paying attention to what we're doing and how do we get this done? And so conversations around the household about good enough. Radical delegation, I think, is a really significant component to how we divide and conquer the chores.
Mm.
The chores are tedious, mind-numbing, boring, and repetitive.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do them.
No, but they have to get done, right?
But they have to be done.
Yeah.
And so these are big, important, and serious conversations in households. And I've done focus groups for the book. And one woman said, we talked about everything before we got married. We talked about everything as our first child was coming, was being born, but we kind of stopped the conversations. And then they went into a very traditional mode of doing things at home. And here she is 15 years later going, ah, I can't, it's so much.
Yeah.
It's been written about for decades.
Mm-hmm. So Regina, what role would race and ethnicity play into emotional labor? Is it different for people of color?
My first thought was absolutely it must be, but I'm not a person of color. And so I had to do research and this was a very This was big for me. I have a good friend here in Los Angeles, and she's a emeriti professor of psychology, Belinda Tucker. And Belinda has a great relationship with Russell, and they've been married for a long time. Mm-hmm. And when I was asking her we were having a conversation about emotional labor. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how do you feel that emotional labor lands on families of color? And this is what she said, and I'm paraphrasing. She goes, Regina, this isn't anything my sisters can write about. Because we're very aware that our men, when they walk out the front door, they walk out their front door with a crushing weight of systemic racism on their shoulder.
Yeah.
That's just the way that is. Mm-hmm. And we can have long conversations about diversity, equity, and inclusion and how to ameliorate that. But the reality is, and I have this visual that this lands on the shoulders of people of color as they walk out their front door.
Yeah.
And it just becomes part of how you walk through your day and how you talk to folks and how you look over your shoulder and how moms are talking about, you know, raising sons to not get arrested. I mean, it's just a chronic piece of American life for families of color. So when you take that burden and you walk back into your front door, how do you say to your spouse, you know, you said that you're on laundry detail this month?
Yeah.
Which seems so inconsequential. But how do you then bring it to a more equity-based household?
Mm-hmm.
Tiffany Blassingame, our friend and colleague, wrote about that relationship with her son in the emotional labor book. Yeah. And she did such a beautiful job showing what equity looks like in her household.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, you are not the man of the house. You're my son. Yeah. This is the work that has to be done at home, you mm-hmm. know? This is the body of work I'm doing outside of the home.
Right.
So those continue to be really important and compelling conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have conversations with Eric about emotional labor?
I have. Doesn't always go all that great. You know,
why do you suppose that is? Why doesn't it go great?
I think a lot of times he might feel like I'm saying I'm doing this, this, and this, like I'm doing, you know, all of this and you're doing this, you know. I think that he feels like I might be minimizing him because, you know, he goes and he works every day. Like he has to go to work, you know, he picks up our son, you know, if he needs to drop him off or whatever he does, you know, and things like that. But I always tell him, you know, oh, I got to do this, 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 you know? And I feel like the patriarchy has it so that men mostly feel like these are things like, well, you're the mother, you should do this anyway, you know? So I feel like it's kind of like that. Yeah. But I do talk about it. I am all about communication. And if I'm feeling something, I'm going to let you know, you know? And I don't think he really likes that part either. It's like, do you have to explain everything? Do you have to communicate about everything, you know? I have these conversations.
Yeah. I had a couple of, two things just came to me while you were speaking. And one is, I was invited to, the wife invited me over to talk about decluttering and organizing. And, so I met the couple in their townhome. And we're sitting on the couch and I turn around and I look at the island in the kitchen, and the island in the kitchen was just packed with everything.
Wow.
From pacifiers to phone cords to bananas, everything. And I pointed to it and I looked at her. I said, how does that make you feel? And she goes, ah, it's awful. It's gross. It makes me so depressed. I hate it. And I pointed to it. I said to him, how does that make you feel? And he goes, ah, doesn't bother me.
Hmm.
And I go, out of my freaking mind. And I said, how is it that her pain has not become your pain, and that you're not sitting here saying to me, Regina, whatever it takes, let's just get this done. He goes, well, I'm the one who wakes up with the baby every night so my wife can get her beauty rest.
Beauty rest.
And I said, and what do you do with the other 90% of the time? I didn't get the job, but I hear this a lot, but it doesn't bother my husband.
Mm.
Put that over here. The other thing I thought about while you were speaking is I was talking to a woman the other day, and she said she's a stay-at-home mom. She's a lawyer working from home, and she's got two small children. And so the bulk of the household is on her back because her husband works outside of the home. And she says, I'm already anxious about when my kids, because I think she has a 1 and a 2-year-old or 1 and a 3-year-old, when we're ready to do play dates, I'm already so burdened. And she goes, I'm already so overwhelmed. And then we're going to do play dates. And then it's arranging and all of that because he doesn't work from home. And I said, well, there's only one component in play dates that you would have to do. The picking up and delivery. He can arrange everything else because all of that's done on email.
Yeah.
Or text. He could do all the others. He can pull the parents. He can set up the date. He can find out what the address. He could do all of that from his desk at his job away from home.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is make yourself available for pickup and drop off.
Mm.
And that was a revolutionary thought for her.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't seeing this through the lens of radical delegation.
Mm.
So apparently in this household, radical delegation could mean he does all the back end work for the play dates.
Mm.
That you separate the tasks. That's why the fair play cards are so impactful, because there are so many, like the invisible mm-hmm. is the calling the parent, you know, doing all of that.
Yeah.
The visible is pick up and drop off.
Yeah.
And so if we're able to, A, honor our partner's pain, but we're a family, but this is our home. And if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. I mean, you know, get down to that, but,
yeah.
But so how, you know, how is it that the other adult in the household isn't acknowledging your pain, speaking in general terms? And then how do we parse out, well, what does it mean to set up play dates? What does it mean to clean the kitchen? What does it actually mean to get all the laundry done?
Mm.
Sort, wash, dry, fold, put away. There's 5 steps to laundry. It's not just laundry.
Yeah.
So I obviously there's still more work to be done, and I believe that making the invisible visible and radical delegation is a way to start ameliorating some of this dysfunction that I'm seeing happening in households. There's a guy that I interviewed for my book named Matthew Frey, and his book, his original title of the book was How Not to Get Divorced, but that's not it right now. And I don't have it in my head, but you know, he got divorced because he wasn't listening, and she divorced him because he wasn't listening. And he was being really disrespectful of how she felt about this.
Oh, wow.
So he said, she divorced me because I left the cup on the counter, until he recognized I left a lot of cups on a lot of counters.
Yeah.
You know, and she's been asking me about the cup on the counter every which way she could possibly think of. Till she said, the hell with it.
Yeah. So that was the way she lessened her burden, I guess. Yeah. When it comes to it. What other ways can we do that aren't as drastic as divorce?
Yeah. Well, again, I think that the Hulu Fair Play, the documentary Fair Play, puts in very real terms and in a language that a lot of people can appreciate, and that we're not the only ones in our household having this. There's a documentary about it. So seeing that together as a couple, with wine, with other couples, to have conversations.
Yeah, because there are a lot of people that might not be as open as talking about it as you and I are, sure. And they might not even realize the burden that's been put on them, right. So that's a great idea.
I'm looking forward to my TED talk coming out, because it's only 13 minutes and 55 seconds, not an hour. And, but again, it's sitting down with the other adult in the household, the person that we've committed our life to.
Yeah.
You know, the person that we know is always going to have our back.
Yeah.
And so many of them do. We feel safe and we feel loved and we feel that we are on this journey together. The missing piece is the equity part of the household, I think. And for me, it leads to, if we get to experience gender equity within our own four walls, what does that mean to unleashing a woman in her professional life as a leader, yeah, and recognizing gender equity in the paid workplace? And I it's not isolated to the home.
Yeah.
Because if there's gender equity at home, we're unleashing men into their full potential in the home, into their full ability to be part of that process, which I think is what we need culturally, systemically, socially, economically, politically. I could put politics into anything. So it's, again, making the invisible visible. And there are some cool tools. I think the Hulu, the Fair Play documentary is significant. My TED talk will be, it's funny and not funny. I know that there are a lot of men out there that are in equal partnership at home. Not sure if it's statistically relevant yet, but there are models out there. Like, you're a communicator. It's all about communication. That's where it starts.
Yeah. I feel like you've dropped so many delicious nuggets of information. And I think that this will resonate with a lot of people, because for me, and I have your book, and hearing you like explain things, it's like,
because there comes a point I see in a lot of families, that you either keep talking about or you just shut down. And my favorite, the Emotional Labor book, has a lot of fun cartoons. And the one I like the most, I want to say it's on page 72, but I could be wrong. It's 73. And if that, and there's a picture of a horse, a dog, and rats. And that if women continue to complain, they're going to be called a nag, a bitch, or a shrew. And who wants that? Who wants that label? So again, we'll tend to make it okay. It's not that big of a deal until it's a big deal again.
Yeah.
So it's a big commitment. It's like, working with chronically disorganized clients, it's never one and done. My team can completely transform a space. But maintaining that transformed space takes work and thought and observation and time. It takes not labeling, judging, or resenting yourself or others.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge trying to working to maintain your cleared space is just as big as making the decision to clear the space and making the decisions about what you're willing to let go of in terms of the physical, tangible property. So again, what are we willing to let go of in the household that neither adult wants to do? What are the things that you're coming up with that you believe have to be done? And if neither one wants to do it, regardless of skill level, skill level should have nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you let go of those things and continue to feel that you are taking great care of your family? You know, what are the things that we can just let go of as a team because you both decided, I don't want to do it and I don't want to do it. Yeah. And you don't want one person, oh, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah. 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 You know, so that makes me think of like some of the things that we've outsourced around our home, you know. So we have a cleaner or someone that comes to clean the house. They only come every couple of weeks, you know, but just that little bit helps, you know, it helps. I don't have to worry about cleaning toilets or, you know, because I don't like that anyway. But that helps. We have an au pair. People don't know what an au pair is. It's like a nanny. So we have an au pair to help with the children. And then we have a lawn guy that comes and you know, does our lawn and, you know, mows the grass. We have a really big backyard. So I feel like, you know, outsourcing those things, you know, even though it's just like three things that are outsourced, helps so much.
So much.
Yeah.
Because it's off your head,
mm-hmm.
you know, ostensibly, unless they don't show up.
Now all I need is a chef, another nanny.
Right. But again, you see what you can outsource and then keep building. And again, it's like as a business owner, when I started A Clear Path, I did everything.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the resources to outsource anything.
Right.
Then the first thing I let go of was bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. I am not a numbers person. Then I let go of the website. And, you know, as I was able to afford the outsourcing. So again, it's that outsourcing wish list. It's also, I think, we can outsource someone to bake cupcakes, or we just buy the cupcakes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A birthday party. You know, there are things that we can outsource. A lot of women I've noticed won't outsource certain things because, well, moms ought to do this.
Yeah.
I don't bake the special birthday cake as I always used to, but now I don't want to.
Yeah.
What does that say about me as a mother?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we've got our own layers of burden that we want to unload.
Okay. Do you want to talk about some fun stuff, Regina?
Sure.
I would love to know what your favorite organizing product is.
Well, I think because so much of the stuff that we have to work on needs to be sorted, I think Ziploc baggies are the best organizing product on the planet. They're see-through. They're, you could seal them closed. You could pack a lot into them. From loose photographs, everybody wants to organize their photos. The hard copy photos.
Yeah.
I think do a first pass on your photos, delete, you know, trash. I know we're trashing photos, all the photos with rocks and houses and, people that you no longer know.
Yeah.
And get rid of those. And then in my family, when my sister and I did a big picture sort with my mom, we started putting dad and his people into a big baggie and mom and her people into a big baggie, okay, and then the family into a big baggie. And at least until we got to the next layer of what we're going to do with the pictures, at least they were sorted into baggies. And to me, that was everything.
That's great. And you know, I feel like with Ziploc bags, there are so many different sizes, right? So you'll have a size for what you need. What is your greatest professional achievement?
I don't know if I've hit it yet.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel, oh my God, I feel like you've accomplished so much.
But I don't know if it's the greatest. I have, I've done a lot. I feel that I don't know how to embrace the wins. And I seem to stay in a sense of it's not that I'm dissatisfied. I got some really fun, exciting news about my TED Talk, and it hasn't dropped yet. And I've been very anxious and frustrated by that until I learned a few days ago that TED.com is holding it back because they think it's such a great thing that they're going to put it into a different kind of marketing package.
That's amazing.
So I sent that email to my therapist going, you think this will do it for me? I mean, I don't know if that's going to satisfy. I don't know if that will emerge as my greatest accomplishment, because I'm the person who, I do this thing, I get it done, and I move on to the next.
I'm the same.
There's no doubt in my mind. Yeah, so, you just get the idea, you do it or you don't do it.
Yeah.
Because then it's not a good, you know, what I always think that all of my ideas are fantastic and some come to fruition and some don't. And it's all good. And those that come to fruition, it's like, oh, okay, next.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've reached it yet.
Yeah. That's so funny. I swear I'm the same way. I mean, although I do feel like currently, I feel like my greatest achievement would be NABPO, like collaborating with other women organizers of color and creating this space for, you know, other organizers, BIPOC professional organizers, creating our Allies program. So as of right now, I feel like that is my greatest achievement, because I am all about empowering women and, you know, helping women in their businesses and doing whatever I can to help propel them forward, you know? I love supporting women. I love women supporting women, you know? So, and I feel like, you know, I've come across so many great people through NABPO, like you, you know, Tiffany, who we love, Dina, like all the ladies that we've had the opportunity to chat with, that, you know, maybe ordinarily we may have crossed paths, you know, but maybe not like we have, you know. So I just really like the, I guess, the networking and opportunities of meeting people and connecting with people that has had in my life so far.
And I agree, because what NABPO does is it has such an incredible reach. And I have a very good friend here in Los Angeles, and we started our companies around the same time. I think I'm 6 months older. She told me once that she didn't know about putting her picture on her website. Because she didn't want someone to not hire her because she's Black.
Yeah.
Killed me.
Yeah.
Because it was not anything I had ever considered for my site.
Yeah.
So what I see NABPO has done, and I think I told somebody at the conference, I think NABPO is the best thing to happen to NAPO. Because other organizers coming in after you won't have that, may not have that question.
Right.
And yeah, to me, that's itness.
Yeah.
So it's just got this ongoing impact to future organizers, not only future organizers of color, but as we have seen in the NAPO DEI craziness on the listserv,
yeah,
just other organizers.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I'm happy about it. I'm happy to have met you and to know you. I think you are just phenomenal. I love everything that you do. I'm excited for your TED Talk and I can't wait to see it. Oh my goodness.
Can't wait to share it. I'm so excited.
Can you tell everyone how they can find out more information about you?
Go to ReginaLark.com. That's for the speaking, emotional labor, women are awesome side of my life. And then for any kind of organizing, I have a ton of blogs on my site and it's aclearpath.com.
I love that. Thank you, Regina, so much.
Thank you, Naima. This was lovely.
Thank you all for joining us. Be sure to tune in next time for an all new episode.